Ça, faut...
Eh ben. The House Committee on Revenue. Today is Thursday, March 4th. We have public hearings on three bills. Before we start, please call the roll.
Representative Levy.
Representative Levy attending by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh here by video.
Representative Smith is excused. Representative Smith Warner.
Excused.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. Thank you. Quorum is present. We have public hearings only. I'd like to make some opening comments first before I open the first public hearing. We have many, many people signed up to testify, at least 45. That's a lot of testimony. I've noticed that there are some names that appear on the witness list for either two or three of the bills that we're hearing. We can get through everyone today. If you would please be brief with your remarks. I'm going to ask everyone to limit your remarks to 2 minutes. We have a timer, you will hear it. And if your comments have been made by somebody else, you could say, I really support the point of view of so-and-so, and I just want to emphasize that that's how I feel, and do it in less than 2 minutes if someone has already explained a point of view that you agree with, because I would like to hear from everybody if it works out that we can. Also, it may be that if you had roughly the same point of view as you're testifying on one bill, you can say, and the same holds true for, and give the other bill number, and then you just wouldn't need to testify on that one. It's totally up to you, but I have witnesses registered, about 45 now on the list. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2014. Can we have a very brief introduction? Is that you, Mr. Malik? I'm having trouble hearing you.
I think you're on mute, Mazin.
Okay.
There we go.
I'm back. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2014 primarily changes the underlying formula for distribution within city amounts that go to the cities from the general taxes that come from marijuana. Cities and counties get 10% each. Cities do have a formula that they divide the money accordingly with. The formula is primarily of two parts. One is based, 75% is based on the population of the city, and 25% is based on number of licenses of the businesses within the city. This bill basically takes out a city or a number of cities, if it remains to be seen how the definitions work, that are within a combined statistical area of certain populations, and changes that formula for them to be based on sales proportional to all sales of marijuana in the state. And in addition to that, it takes out that city or the cities that qualify outside the main 10% formula and makes it primarily off the top of all tax collections. That's what the bill does for you.
Thank you. Committee, do you have any questions for Mr. Malik or LRO before we begin our public testimony? Okay, we are on House Bill 2014. This one is about the distribution of the money. Do we have Representative Owens with us?
You have his chief of staff.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Dominguez. I am the chief of staff for Representative Mark Owens, who represents Oregon House District 60. Representative Owens apologizes for not being able to be here himself, but asks that I attend to share his testimony since he is testifying on another bill currently. Representative Owens's testimony reads as follows. Colleagues, Ontario is a small city of about 11,000 people in Malheur County. It is the largest city on the Oregon-Idaho border and is less than an hour from the Boise metro area with 750,000 people, whose closest access to legalized marijuana is Ontario. Both medical and recreational cannabis use in Idaho is not legal. Because of this, Ontario is the second largest retailer of cannabis behind only Portland and accounts for 10% of all Oregon sales. Think about that. The little town of Ontario is the second largest retailer of marijuana in the state of Oregon. Ontario cannabis retailers are averaging approximately $100 million in sales and nearly 900,000 transactions per year. That's almost 2,500 sales daily, with 90% of those sales being citizens from Idaho. The public cost of importing buyers from Idaho is staggering, and a unique situation to Ontario that is not adequately covered by the current 3% local retail tax. Roads and infrastructure, public safety, and healthcare services are all impacted by the intense daily traffic. In addition, Ontario remains one of the most economically challenged cities in the state and has had to cut vital public services in the last few years. I introduced House Bill 2014 and House Bill 2015 at the request of the city to help Ontario meet these challenges. They want to be good partners for the state while making sure to keep their commitment to their own small community, to be able to use their unique position to cover the city's costs and benefit its residents. House Bill 2014 allows for the distribution of state marijuana dollars to be distributed to certain cities based on their share of the retail sales of marijuana items instead of being allocated based upon population. House Bill 2015 would allow Oregon voters to impose a local tax of up to 10% on cannabis sales within a city, thus increasing the current 3% cap to 10% statewide. These two bills would help the City of Ontario be able to cover its costs from the influx of traffic stemming from marijuana sales, and then to invest in public safety, housing, and important infrastructure needs to help the city prosper. In closing, Representative Owens would be happy to answer any follow-up questions regarding House Bill 2014 or House Bill 2015 via email. We look forward to continuing this conversation and thank you for your time.
Thank you for being with us on behalf of the representative. My question is, since you mentioned House Bill 2015 also, would you still want to testify on 2015, or did those comments apply for both bills?
I think that applies for both bills.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for being with us. The next speakers will be Mayor Hill, Adam Brown, John Kirby, Ken Hart, in that order. And again, a 2-minute time limit, or if your points have already been made, you can emphasize and underscore someone else's comments. But please, Mayor Hill, it's your turn.
I won't transmit this over the airs. I thank you, committee, for hearing us today. Can you all hear me?
We can hear you fine.
I'm the mayor of Ontario and have been a builder developer for most of my life and have done so in three western states. I've built and owned over 400 apartments, several office buildings and subdivisions, Lately, all of my subdivision work has been in Fruitland, Payette, Idaho. This makes me uniquely qualified to testify about the special circumstances that exist as a far eastern border town. Please hear me about the circumstances that confront Ontario versus Fruitland and Payette, Idaho, our neighbors only separated by a bridge over the Snake River. Idaho has a lower income tax, lower estate tax, lower property tax, lower power rates, lower professional liability insurance, and more lax land use laws. All of these things contribute to the huge growth for our neighbors across the river. We are rapidly becoming a city of have-nots, and our neighbors across the city of haves. What do we have? We have 7 dispensaries currently operating and 2 more under construction. This is not all bad, because it has resulted in jobs and the building of and conversion of some eyesores into nice looking buildings. I have personally benefited by developing and selling a property to a dispensary operator. 90% of the marijuana sales are to Idaho residents. We are the only town of 11,500 people, but Ontario sells 10% of the marijuana sales for the entire state of Oregon. You may hear testimony about the black market and additional taxes will exacerbate that. We do not believe this to be true. First, because of the numerous dispensaries that we have, and some operators are now offering discounts and specials. Secondly, because there is a limit on the amount that can be purchased, many buyers are making multiple dispensary stops to maintain the amount, to maximize the amount they can be purchased. Should the legislature not want to increase a possible local option tax for the entire state, please consider the uniqueness of Ontario in this, and this will be also have to go to the voters of Ontario for final approval locally. Other speakers will talk of the demands put on the city because of the daily influx of people. One thing that sticks out in my mind is that we have 111 homeless children in Ontario HC School District. This does not include preschool and dropouts. We need to help them. So we support 2014 and 2015. And thank you for listening. And do any of you have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your comments. And you also spoke to House Bill 2015. So may we assume that your testimony applies to both of those bills?
The testimony applies to both bills.
Okay. Do you need to speak again when I open that hearing?
I don't think so. I think I've made the point that there's others to follow that will make additional points, and I don't need to take more of your time. I hope you heard me. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for your testimony. Adam Brown. The microphone is muted.
Okay.
Looks like you're all set now.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Nathanson and members of the Revenue Committee. I just wanted to make a few points about a study we conducted 2 years ago that that will probably be in your supporting documents of the elasticity of demand for marijuana taxation. We're currently, I'll make these comments to both House Bill 2014 and 2015. We're currently exporting $1.6 million of the state revenue sharing money to other cities and counties throughout Oregon that have legalized marijuana. We get to keep about 60,000 of that, 1.7 million that's going out. And that's why we asked for House Bill 2014, and we're grateful for our representative for sponsoring it. The marijuana has been good monetarily for Ontario, and it's been good for the state of Oregon and our community peer communities who've benefited from the large amount of sales here in Ontario. We are one of the lowest taxation states for marijuana at a cap of 20% right now. California has a cap of 40%, followed by Washington at 37%, Colorado at 30%, and Nevada at 25%. So we have one of the lowest taxing rates on marijuana. We looked at several studies, but one of them specifically is with the University of Oregon, who watched what happened in the state of Washington when they went from a tax of the supply chain, 25% at three different levels, so 75% effectively compounded. And they went to a 37% tax.
Excuse me, Mr. Brown, I'm going to interrupt for a moment. Even though the timer went off, if your comments are applying to both bills, we're going to give you an extra 2 minutes, and then it's all done, if that's how your comments are going to be presented.
Yes, ma'am. That would be very much appreciated.
Okay.
So what they found was, this is a great example to see how the taxation impacted it, because what they found was that the actual price per gram of marijuana went up by a small increment, even though the taxation went from 75% to 37%. And what they found from the University of Oregon was that the growers, suppliers, and retailers realized the increase or the reduction in taxation, it went into their pockets. It didn't translate to savings to the consumer. So what that tells us is that the price is very inelastic. In other words, it's not sensitive to increases in taxation. What we're asking for here is a opportunity for our citizens to vote on whether we can increase this local marijuana tax. This would not be done arbitrarily or unilaterally by the city council, but it would have to be between the city residents voting on it on a ballot measure. So what you would be doing by passing this is giving local citizens the option to speak about what they feel is appropriate tax level. And I'll be honest, we have good relationships with the dispensary owners, and we've had a collaborative relationship ever since it started. Of course, there's disagreements, but we now try to maintain a positive one. One of the comments from a local person, Sydney Cook, that is introduced into the reading as a testimony, and she is a very active, in a very positive way to our community, her and her husband, and I consider them personal friends. We have done a lot of things. I'll wrap up. We've done a lot of things to improve our community, because that's our main goal with being able to do this, is secure us for the long term of Ontario. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is John Kirby, and after that will be Ken Hart.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Kirby, and I am a city councilor for Ontario, Oregon. I know you are hearing us out of duty, and the needs are everywhere, but we have a unique opportunity to help mitigate problems that are new to this part of Oregon. And this will apply to both bills, please. Community poverty is overwhelming. We have the lowest per capita income in the state at $16,335. And the second lowest medial household income in the state. Our homeless are probably not even mentioned in those figures. Because of the many causes, including but not limited to families who are here to support their Snake River Correctional Institution inmates, agricultural workers out of work, poor from other smaller jurisdictions who are encouraged to come here, poor Idahoans seeking better or free health care, our homeless issues have grown exponentially in the last 3 years. I attended a meeting of business and property owners from a segment of Ontario last week. It has always been a poor part of the community, but it has dramatically changed. They are frustrated by homeless and drug issues. We know these issues are in metro areas, but never here. Homeless are urinating and defecating on their properties. Needles are thrown on the ground and their property vandalized. All this in the past 12 months. In our high school, 30% of the students couch surf to have a home so they can finish school. Homeless with mental issues can only be under observation in our local hospital. We have to transport those with greater needs 4 hours away, one direction, to get them into a residential treatment facility. I know a local veteran with mental and emotional issues who's recently released from the Boise VA hospital. He has a job, but he can't get there because he lost the vehicle he was using and the room he lived in during his stay in the hospital. He's living in a motel, but soon will use his savings and he will be on the street and unable to get to his jobs. Vandalism and shoplifting are rampant. We trespass several people a week from my hardware store. For the second year in a row, we have had temporary winter shelter that is filled with mainly seniors and adults with children. We have 16 units and have over 300 homeless in the city, with more coming weekly. Stability is needed. We can't solve this entirely now, but with additional resources, we can be more able to meet the needs. Our window of opportunity is short. Once Idaho approves the sale of recreational marijuana, we will lose this opportunity. Thank you for hearing me. Oh, this is out of the March 3rd, My Hero Enterprise, and showing a level of concern expressed by our citizenry.
Thank you for your testimony. And if you would like to take a picture or a scan of that and submit it for the public record, we'd be happy to receive it. Testimony, written testimony, can be submitted for up to 24 hours from the time that we started this hearing today. So if you get it in by about 1 o'clock tomorrow, it can still be part of our record.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Ken Hart. And while Mr. Hart is making his way, the next speakers will be, Casey Houlihan, Portia Mittens, Mark Garst, and Russ Belleville.
Chair Nathanson, this is Ken Hart. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the members of the committee. My name is Ken Hart. I'm a member of the Ontario City Council, resident of Malheur County. And just would like to thank Representative Owens for his sponsorship of this. We very much appreciate that. My comments will apply both to House Bill 2014 and 2015. I support the comments of the mayor, our city manager, and Mr. Kirby. As they noted again, with Idaho flooding into Ontario, we have 1,500 unique visitors a day into our small community. And you can imagine the pressure that puts on our resources, whether it's our police department, just the wear and tear on our roads. And we are very grateful for the 3% that we are able to collect now at the local level, but very much would like to see the ability to have a local vote to raise that as high as 10%. And I think that's the overall ask. And that ultimately would benefit every city in the state of Oregon. As you know, House Bill 2015 does just not benefit Ontario. It would benefit any city in the state of Oregon. And I have to assume most cities like us are under intense pressure financially right now, especially with COVID. How do we get our state and our city back on our feet? The areas that have been noted that we would utilize these funds for would be specifically homelessness, has been a significant increase in the last few years, unrelated to marijuana. That's just a societal impact for many cities in Oregon. We also in Ontario have been using funds to pay down our PERS debt. As you know, many cities are having to put more and more money towards PERS interest, and we're utilizing these funds to be able to help us to reduce that debt so we can free up operational funds so that way we can have more police and more fire and more behavioral health services. And then trying to improve a community like Ontario with increases in parks, bike paths. So being smart on how we would utilize these funds to invest in one-time capital improvements to get our debt down. So when and if Idaho does legalize marijuana, we've paid down that debt and we can free up our operational dollars to go back into police and fire and other services. So this would be a big benefit to our community, but also to every community in the state of Oregon if they are allowed to have this flexibility to increase the local tax up to 10%. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hart. I think it might start to get a bit confusing for the public record. We have two bills that our speakers have been speaking to so far. The public hearing is open on 2014, but some of the comments are relating to House Bill 2015. I am happy to make sure that when I open the public hearing on 2015 to acknowledge the speakers who have already made their comments, if that's all right with the committee. If you would feel more comfortable, we will open that public hearing as well. But I think it's adequate to just acknowledge that we have received public testimony. If someone disagrees, please let me know in the next 5 seconds or so, and we'll just keep going on the way we have been. Looks like it's all right. Okay, thank you, committee. Next speaker is Casey Houlihan. And again, we are having a public hearing right now on House Bill 2014, the distribution formula for the tax.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson and members of the House Committee on Revenue, thank you all for allowing us to speak this afternoon. For the record, my name is Casey Houlihan. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Retailers of Cannabis Association, the largest trade association of cannabis businesses in Oregon, representing over 500 different member businesses, primarily retailers, but we have members throughout the supply chain of all license types and of all sizes, from big businesses to mom and pop stores located in every corner of the state. We're here today to express our oppositions to both House Bill 2014 and 2015. Regarding 2014, from our reading of this bill, the result of the legislation as written would be a dramatic decrease in the portion of state tax dollars being distributed to municipalities in the Portland metro area. While we recognize the need to direct tax revenues to the rural parts of the state responsible for the majority of cannabis production, we feel that this move would be imprudent at this juncture, given that these revenue sources are somewhat new and that the municipalities within the metro area have created very effective programs for community reinvestment based on these revenue sources. Further, some local programs, like the City of Portland's cannabis program, have been doing remarkable work in the areas of social equity, racial justice, and community investment for some of the predominantly BIPOC communities that were hit the hardest by unjust cannabis criminalization policies in the past, and where most of the state's BIPOC residents reside. In order to maintain the ability to help right the wrongs suffered by these communities as a direct result of failed drug criminalization policies from recent decades, these revenue streams must be maintained. We believe strongly that there will be opportunities in the future to increase the revenue from the cannabis industry going into rural cities and counties, especially once we are at a point where the state is able to legally export our surplus cannabis to other legal states and countries. However, we are simply not there yet, and we believe a change of this magnitude is ill-advised at this time. Regarding House Bill 2015,
Mr. Houlihan, you're signed up to speak to that one. Would you like to just wait until we open that hearing?
Chair Nathanson, I'd leave that to you. I'm happy to speak on both now if that'll save us time. I'm also happy to hold off, whichever you find proper.
Just keep going. Thank you. Mr. Alanak, we're going to stand at ease for just a moment. Can we confirm that we're out of recess? Okay, thank you. At this time, I am opening a public hearing on House Bill 2015. Apologies to everyone who's watching. The two bills do very different things, but it appears that most, or at least many of our speakers, planned their testimony in a sort of intertwined fashion to talk about both bills, although it's two separable topics. So to facilitate the hearing process and to be more comfortable for those providing testimony, we're going to hear both bills simultaneously, and then they can speak just once. I'd still like to try to accommodate everybody. And for right now, please change the allowable time. Don't feel like you have to rush and get it done in two. Let's change it to three and see if that can be adequate. And Mr. Houlihan, you'll get at least another minute or two to finish, because this has been a little bit awkward interrupting you. Before you speak, Mr. Malik, could you please explain to us, give the introduction for House Bill 2015, and then we'll resume.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2015 talks a little differently about the subject. The background on this: in House Bill 2041 of the 2015 session, this was the bill that changed the marijuana taxation from a harvest tax to a point of sale tax. So the state point of sale tax is at 17%. And in the same bill, the legislature, the 2015 legislature, allowed the local governments who allow marijuana businesses and in their jurisdictions to have an additional local tax of a maximum of 3%, of course, provided that they do have council or city council or county governments vote on that and approve it. The bill 2015 basically pushes that maximum from 3% to 10%, that allowance for local governments to impose a point of sale tax. And I just a note, Madam Chair, I do have a couple things, backgrounds in the material, if any of the members are interested in the history and the effects, of course, that we haven't mentioned, the intervention of Measure 110 voted on in November 2020, that kind of messes up the whole chain.
Thank you. Mr. Malik, do you have a slide that shows the difference between before Measure 110 and after?
Yes, Madam Chair.
If you could show just that one, could we please see it before we resume?
Okay. This will be the other slide where the chart is. If our committee assistant advances one more.
And that one is available on OLIS for everyone to see. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's in the meeting material, both of them, the history overview as well as the chart. And if we can, that so the chart, as you see it, there's two different ones. The what I've done here to illustrate the point of the effect of Measure 110. Is basically put the amounts, the same amount of taxes would be coming in anyhow at $319 million for the 21-23 biennium. The orange or the lighter bars here represent what the new distribution under the measure would do, and the blue would show what happens if the measure was not here or before the existence of the measure. And you could see that the bulk or the lion's share, about $229 million from that tax revenue is now under the Measure 110 going to a new use that is not what the traditional distributions are. Traditional distributions are capped by the measure at $90 million per biennium, or $45 million a year. And in the pie chart underneath that, you see that 228 or 229, if you round it up, of the reductions in the current uses and where these reductions are mostly occurring. So you would see the biggest piece of the pie at 91.6 million being a reduction to the state school fund. And if you look at the other two equal pieces, which is the 22.9 and 22.9, these are for both cities and counties, because they both get about 10% of what comes into the state revenue. And that's why they're both equally reduced by about $22 or $23 million a biennium. Of course, that's about $11.5 million a year for each of these pots. That's before it distributes between the different cities and the different counties according to the formula that we described in House Bill 2014.
Thank you very much for presenting the material. Committee, any questions for Mr. Malik before we continue with our public testimony? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Malik, can you, in 2015, is this allowing municipalities to raise tax, or do they have to then refer that to voters?
President Rushki, in 2015, the legislature, of course,
House Bill 2015, that's what I meant. House Bill 2015, Bill you just described, not the year 2015.
Okay. Oh, that House Bill 2015 does, I don't think it requires it to be a voter. However, it does require an active positive vote by the governing body of the municipality.
Okay.
So the city council or county council.
Okay. Madam Chair, also, I looked on OLIS and was unable to see the slide that Mr. Malik was presenting. So just to double check, to make sure that's up there before the end of the meeting would be great.
It is actually in the meeting materials, not under the bill. So it's in the meeting material because the whole meeting today is for the marijuana. So if you go to that tab where the meeting material is, you would find both slides, or you should at least.
I'm there right now, and I see six documents, three witness testimonies, and three preliminary SMS for each bill, but I do not see anything else there right now. So just FYI. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll work on it in the next few minutes. It behind the scenes.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're ready to continue with the public testimony. Mr. Houlihan, back to you.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. Again, Casey Houlihan, Oregon Retailers of Cannabis Association. We're here today to convey our strong opposition to House Bill 2015. The cannabis industry remains somewhat anomalous on the Oregon business landscape, with the first licenses for adult use businesses having been issued less than 5 years ago, when the bulk of this market operated in the underground and illicit economy. During that 5 year period, there have been tremendous strides in bringing market share into the legal economy, but there's a lot of work left still to do, and consumers remain highly price conscious. Cheaper illicit cannabis products remain readily available as a byproduct of the ongoing federal prohibition of cannabis nationally. And Oregon, as many of you know, remains a leader in illicit cannabis production and export. One only needs to do a Craigslist search for 420 or OMMP to see the ready availability of these products on secondary markets presently. Given the nascency of our industry and the ready availability of unregulated cannabis here in the state, a problem that will not be solved until we have a legal means of exporting our surplus cannabis to other states, We feel that such a steep increase in the cost of retail cannabis is very likely to displace a very large and significant percentage of consumers from the legal marketplace. This same determination was made by your legislative colleagues when a similar tax increase measure was being examined in the 2017 session. In fact, it is theorized that by several leading economic analysts in the industry who have estimated that this type of increase will almost certainly lead to a double-digit percentage of consumers being displaced from the legal market, who will instead buy from unregulated sources. Not only could this result in a potential net loss of tax revenue, but also poses public safety risks. Product on the illicit market are untested for harmful contaminants, and people making those sales are not checking IDs to ensure that the people making the purchases are at least 21 years of age. Despite the headlines touting record-breaking retail sales figures from the last year of over $1.1 billion in total sales, that figure doesn't take into account the incredibly high volume of retail licensees in Oregon. With over 730 active retail stores, per store sales average to roughly $1.5 million per year, barely enough for many smaller mom-and-pop operators to stay afloat, especially with the unusually high federal tax rates that cannabis businesses must pay due to Section 280E of the federal tax code, which prohibits them from taking most deductions available to other businesses. We ask the committee to consider these factors in their thinking about this proposed legislation, as these are the reasons why we are asking you to oppose House Bill 2015. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you. Please stay around. We're going to take some more testimony, and then I'll ask the committee if they have questions. So for anyone who's already spoken, if you're able to stay, we invite you to stay with us. Portia Mittens, Mark Garst, you'll be after that.
Hello. I would like to say good afternoon to Madam Chairman and the rest of the representatives. My name is Portia Mittens, and I represent the Coffee Pot Dispensary in Sumter, Oregon. I am one of the owners, and I'm also a member of the Oregon Retailers Cannabis Association and the chair of the Social Equity and Racial Justice Committee. And I am here to, well, let me start off by saying we are in rural Oregon. We are maybe 45 minutes from Ontario. So while they are doing phenomenal, and I am happy that they're doing phenomenal, that has affected us in a negative manner. And another thing that will affect us in the negative manner is if taxes are allowed to be raised another 7% from the 3%, making it 27%. So that means 27 cents out of every dollar will be taken from us after we've already had, you know, money taken from us because of the opening of Ontario, which again is great for them. But I would like for you all to keep in mind how that affects smaller businesses such as myself, such as ones where we are mom and pop, although I'm not a mom, but it affects us in the same manner. I would like to just say I agree with Casey Houlihan was speaking of the 280 and us not being able to take the necessary, you know, regular deductions that other people take, as well as there is an illicit market, and it is a real thing. I am from Illinois, and I know for a fact that it does exist. And if taxes continue to get higher in Oregon, it will increase that even more. I mean, I know that firsthand. I'm not going to say names. I'm just saying I know that it happens firsthand. And I believe the goal for cannabis taxes is to keep as much money in Oregon as possible and not to spread it around the country at this point. And I believe that the passing of HB 215 will not assist in that. It will be counterproductive to the state of Oregon in trying to increase its money. So to that point, I oppose House Bill 2015.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will hear from Mark Garst. After Mark Garst, we are going to hear from Russ Belleville, Rob Bovet, and Steve Marks.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the League of Oregon Cities. I was signed up for both bills, and I'll just say very briefly on House Bill 2014. The League opposes House Bill 2014. It would take money from some cities and give it to other cities, and you know, for that reason, we're not able to support that bill. On House Bill 2015, we strongly support this bill. We truly appreciate Representative Owens bringing this concept forward. You know, I have submitted written testimony. It includes logos from a number of communities across the state who are also supporting this change. It would, again, as we've discussed, it would allow us to increase the local marijuana taxes from the current maximum of 3% up to a possible 10%. And just to kind of highlight what what Mazin said, the passage of Measure 110 has just had a devastating effect on local governments as far as a reduction in revenue. We are looking at, between cities and counties, a loss of about $45.7 million in state marijuana revenue for the 21-23 biennium, according to my read of the local, of the latest estimates from the Office of Economic Analysis. And I would certainly love to be corrected by Mazin if he has a different number, but that is a reduction of almost 72% based off of those projections. That is huge. You know, your local communities are struggling right now revenue-wise. With the pandemic, we've seen losses to our lodging taxes, park fees, development fees, gas taxes, and the other shoe's yet to drop. We're worried that we're going to lose a bunch of money on property taxes. If commercial vacancies are up, as of the January 1 assessment date, that's going to be reflected in local budgets starting in on July 1 of 2021. So we're very concerned, and this change would go a long way towards undoing the damage that Measure 110 will do. We heard the voters. They wanted more money to go to recovery and in Measure 110, and we certainly appreciate that. This bill would not undercut that goal. That money would still go to recovery, but then we would be able to increase local taxes to offset some of that loss. I don't think that the voters were saying that they wanted local governments to have to cut services in order to fund that recovery. And so I think that we can have our cake and eat it too on this one. We do know that the counties are going to want to have a conversation about maybe getting a share. Most of these stores are obviously in city limits, and counties would not get a share of that. And we're welcome to have that conversation. We know that they've lost a lot of money for Measure 110 as well. I will just say, you know, I appreciate the folks from the industry, obviously. And I mean, I understand the difficulty of doing business in a world where you're not allowed to deduct a lot of your business expenses. And, you know, the last time that the League was out in D.C., this was one of our top legislative priorities. And I think that there's a federal change coming where they will be able to get banked, and hopefully they'll be able to do some deducting of expenses. But that's a federal issue. It's not a state issue. For Oregon, the question is, you know, what is this tax? How's it going to compare to our neighbors? And as has previously been discussed, you know, you need to include local sales tax when you look at our neighbors. But the numbers I've seen, and I would love for Mazin to take a look at this, the maximum in Washington is maybe 45.4%.
Mr. Garst, we heard the timer already. I don't know if you heard it. If you have additional testimony, I encourage you to submit it in writing within, like by 1 o'clock or so tomorrow.
I appreciate that, Chair Nathanson. I have submitted written testimony. And so, yes, we'll still be 10% below our neighbors. That's my point, more than. So thank you very much.
And thanks for that final point. That was succinct. Russ Belville.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Russ Belville, and I have a unique perspective on HB 2014 and 2015. I'm talking to you right now from my shift at the coffee pot dispensary that Portia Mittens, two testifiers ago, is the owner of. We are in the small mountain community of Sumter, Oregon, population 208 or 209 when I'm here. I also live in the city of Ontario, Oregon, and I am working on the medical marijuana initiative in the state of Idaho. So with that perspective, I'd like to say I oppose both of these bills. First, with HB 2014, If Ontario gets a larger slice of any pie, that means other people are getting a smaller slice of that pie, including the cities of Huntington and Sumter in eastern Oregon that had been flushed with marijuana tax money until the shops opened up in Ontario. Now, again, like Portia said, good for them. That's very nice. But we've been coping with both a pandemic and a massive reduction in our business. Having to keep our prices low, keeping our prices low is the only way we're able to bring in visitors from farther away, lure them from Ontario. A raise in the taxes is going to make that near impossible and likely could shut down this business, which is one of the few Black-owned marijuana dispensaries in the state of Oregon. With regard to HB 2015, it's surprising to me to hear the city leaders of the city of Ontario complaining about 15,000 unique visitors coming into town every day, as if there's nothing but bad that comes from that. That city is pulling in $250,000 in marijuana tax revenue, 90% of it, as admitted, from Idahoans. Those Idahoans won't get a chance to vote on whether that tax goes up to 3% to 10%. They'll just see their prices go up. And if those Idahoans see those prices go up, fewer of them will travel to Ontario and more of them will get their product from the black market in the state of Idaho. So that is a problem with the bill as well. Also a problem with this is we're continuing to see Ontario getting into this mode of depending on Idaho's prohibition. So much so that when I was working on the bills in Idaho, Mayor Riley Hill was there, was signed up to testify for the bill that would prohibit Idaho from ever having medical marijuana. So I'm concerned about how this is starting to creep into interstate politics, where the people in rural eastern Oregon might be fighting in the state of Idaho to continue criminalizing those people in order to get the lucrative tax revenue from the cross-border traffic. John Kirby, earlier at one of the city council meetings for Ontario, called it like hitting the lottery and warned of Idaho changing its marijuana laws and losing that lottery. I think $250,000 a month is plenty, and the people of Idaho don't get a say on that. They're getting all the jobs, business, and extra revenue from gas tax from the visitors of Idaho. That should be enough. Thank you for letting me testify, and stay tuned for any questions if anyone has them.
Thanks for your testimony. Next, we are going to hear from Rob Bovet, and after that, Steve Marks.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rob Bovet, legal counsel and legislative director for the Association of Oregon Counties, and I will be very brief, and I'll cover all the bills in one time. You don't need to call me on the other bills. First off, really, Mazin and Mark really covered what's happened to local government. So as you all know, regulating the cannabis industry is a multi-layered deal. We need the state heavily involved. You hear from Steve Marks here in a minute. We have the counties heavily involved, particularly on the production side. We have the cities heavily involved, particularly on the retail side. So I'll speak to each of these three bills. And I will say also, we've taken a big hit with Measure 110. We understand what the voters said, but as Mark pointed out and as Mazin pointed out, we've taken a 72% hit on our marijuana tax revenues, and we were already hurting in terms of our ability to adequately regulate the industry. We're getting buried, particularly in Southwest Oregon. You'll hear more about that on 2294. On 2014, really the county doesn't have a stake in it, I think. Casey Houlihan was correct in his interpretation of the bill, but I have to admit to you, Madam Chair, I don't exactly understand what that bill does. So I offer my help if you want to work on that bill or move it. I'm more than happy to help and sit down and talk and rewrite it if that's what you want to do. I don't think we really have a stake in it. I think it probably does shift some of city revenues to other cities, but I can't even tell you that for sure. On 2015, Mark Garcia-Melisi pretty much covered what I was going to say. You know, we've seen a huge loss. All the retail shops virtually are in the city, so we're going to need a percentage share of any increase so we can do our regulatory business as well. And we'll work with the cities on working all that out. And then I have just a few brief comments about 2294, but you may want me to not do that now or do that now.
Correct. If you can stay with us, I'd rather take those comments later.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Mr. Marks.
Chair Nathanson. For the record, and members of the committee, Steve Marks, Executive Director, Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Usually we don't come in and talk to the legislature too much about how you spend the money or how you raise the money, and I really am not here to talk about that. I did go to, we went in the summer of 19 around the state on a wine and marijuana town halls. We had the opportunity to get out to Ontario, Oregon. I heard the same kinds of issues that you're hearing here today. I was impressed with the disparate, I think, impacts, particularly with the boom and bust nature of Ontario coming into the mix. You know, we have opt-in and opt-out counties and municipalities there, and it did seem that the impacts and the way the formulas work was a special problem in Oregon. I committed to, we met with public officials, law enforcement, the industry together, and I committed to them to come back and talk to legislators and policymakers about looking at these problems and grappling with them and providing solutions. Ontario has been unique for us in licensing folks with that distance being a border town with another state where we have issues of interstate commerce. They had special needs of OLCC for, you know, call centers to check on manifests. They had special needs around particularly making sure that we got adequate training out there. One of the things, and you know, the Sumter issue that Russ Bellevue just raised was a good example. When Ontario came in, it did switch the economics of who is benefiting in the region from our distribution and from their opting in and Ontario opting in. I was tremendously impressed, if you just look at Ontario itself, with the community. If you look at its daytime and nighttime population, I can't remember what the statistics were, but they were pretty boggling. It's a real hub of Oregon for transportation, and witnessed and heard about the human resource aspects problems taking place in the region. So I told them I would convey that to policymakers when I could. This was an opportunity to do that. I'll end it there. If you have any questions of me, appreciate it.
Thank you for the testimony. Committee, that concludes the people who were on the list for 2014. I'm almost ready to move to 2015, the remaining people who have signed up. But do you have any questions for these speakers, so that we can thank them and they can leave if they have other things to do? Any questions for the speakers we've heard so far? Okay. Continuing on the witness list for House Bill 2015, I want to note for the record that we have heard from Andrea Dominguez, Mayor Riley Hill, Adam Brown, John Kirby, and Ken Hart, who all submitted testimony for 2015 along with 2014. We have also already heard from Steve Marks, Casey Houlihan, Portia Mittens, Russ Bellevue, Rob Bovet, and Mark Garst. I'm gonna now start calling on the additional names. First is Ethan Nelson. After that will be Megan Wallstatter, Ben Condon. There will be some more after that. Ethan Nelson, you're next. And this will be 2 minutes each because it's just to the one bill.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and committee members. For the record, my name is Ethan Nelson. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene, and we're here in support of House Bill 2015. We also thank Representative Owens for bringing this bill forward. I won't repeat what Mark Garst from League of Oregon City said. I'll just provide some specifics related to Eugene. Before Measure 110, the City of Eugene was on track to receive $1.3 million in state-shared marijuana tax receipts in fiscal year 21, up from $1 million the year before. This revenue is placed within the city's general fund, which, as many of you heard, provides this funding for public safety, community courts, parks, library and recreation, homeless shelter programs, climate actions, and land use, to name a few of the critical services in our community. Based on our projections, we estimate that that $1.3 million will be reduced to roughly $200,000 per year going forward. We are currently working through budget forecasts for fiscal year 22 with an assumption that we will need to account for that $1 million annual hit to the general fund. As you've heard, this bill does not dive into the merits or challenges of 110, but rather it provides local governments the opportunity to funding for services in our community. Two items that I think that from testimony they'd like to address. One is that there is a discrepancy between what Mr. Mazin and Mr. Malik has said and Mr. Garst and some of the communities from the testimony from Ontario related to. Is it an action by the city council, or as it is in the bill, it's referred to voters? And so having clarity on that going forward would be great. And then I would also just offer that speaking for the city of Eugene, there is not widespread agreement related to the statement from Mr. Bovet and Mr. Garst on the county distribution. And so that too needs to be moved forward. So thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Megan Wallstatter, followed by Ben Condon.
Hi, Chair Nathanson and members of the House Committee on Revenue. My name is Megan Wallstatter. My husband and I own a Tier 1 production license in Clackamas County. I'm a founding member of the Oregon Cannabis Association, and currently I'm also a board member and chair of the Legislative Policy Committee. Cannabis businesses operate with different margins than any other businesses due to Section 280E of the Internal Revenue Code. We aren't able to deduct traditional business costs such as payroll, rent, supplies, et cetera. Any increase in tax could devastate the tiny gains made by this fragile industry. This would heavily impact the mom-and-pop businesses. Oregon's cannabis products are affordable right now. If we increase the tax, stores will be forced to raise their prices or cut their narrow margins. This will result in a crash of the market and closure of retail outlets owned by Oregonians. An increase in taxes will also drive customers to the unregulated market and or across the river to Vancouver. After the sales tax hit Oregon's cannabis market in 2017, people fled to Vancouver stores. Several stores in Vancouver had the highest retail sales in the state of Washington due to the influx of Oregonians. Over the years, our prices have stabilized and fewer Oregonians are crossing the river for cannabis purchases. An increase to the sales tax will push people back over the river, and Oregon will lose those tax dollars. I ask the committee to please oppose HB 2015. That's it. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ben Condon, followed by Kayle Gray. Ben Condon? Kayle Gray, are you available?
Sorry, this is Ben Condon. Am I still? I was muted. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Nathanson and the members of the committee. My name is Ben Condon. I'm a CPA licensed in the state of Oregon for the last 13 years. I have a, I'm the founder and managing member of BC CPA and Consulting. I have over 100 business cannabis licensed business clients in the state of Oregon. I have to admit that I don't see very many success stories in the cannabis industry. There's a lot of struggle among the businesses of the suppliers, distributors, and mainly the retailers. Retailers in Portland have been hit with a major crime wave over the last year. And this interplays with 280E because when you are robbed as a cannabis company, you cannot deduct your losses, your cash losses. And so you get robbed basically twice, because if you are this tax increase is going to force retailers to hold lots and lots of cash on site for a month, because that's cash that they're collecting on behalf of the state, and they can't put it oftentimes into a bank or any other place. And so they're holding hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's creating a safety issue. And the police do not respond kindly either when they are robbed. So, and then also along the lines of the price inelasticity. So they're not gonna be able to pass those costs on to the consumer, and it's going to force more companies to either drop out of the licensed market. Anyway, that is my testimony. Thank you very much. And I am opposed to, that's why I ask you to oppose 2015.
Thank you for the testimony. Cale Gray. Is Amanda Metzler available? And after Amanda will be Bo Whitney.
Sorry, Chair, this is Cale Gray. I was on mute, it looks like. Do you mind if I go?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Cale Gray. I'm CEO of Tokyo Starfish. We are a retailer, producer and wholesaler based in Bend, Oregon, and have a retail location over in Salem these days. Over the past 5 years, we've started this as a self-funded business and now have 85 employees that we have created. And I am here today to oppose House Bill 2015. I believe with the increase of costs that we have to operate a cannabis business, the increase of taxes would be detrimental to us operating a business. I believe that it goes against the founding principles of the Oregon legal cannabis rules, which was to try and get as many people out of the black market and into the legal market in the first place. I believe an increase in tax of this magnitude would push people back into the black market, into unregulated products that would be harmful to our public as a whole. I support the comments of Casey Houlihan and Russ Belville and Megan Wallstatter, as well as Ben Condon on these. You know, I think that because of the gross revenues that the cannabis market brings in, I think there's a belief that there's a lot of money out there that we have, and this just isn't true. With the factor of 280E, bank fees, non-insurance, you know, it is very, very tough to operate a cannabis business. I also operate two other businesses outside of the cannabis market, and there is not, with the regulations, it is insanely difficult to operate. And I believe that, as stated before, House Bill 2015 would be detrimental into the cannabis market as a whole. So thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Amanda Metzler.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Amanda Metzler, founder and president of Farms Inc., Oregon's Cannabis Farm Advocates, and the chair of the Josephine County Cannabis Advisory Panel. We are supportive of the comments of Mr. Houlihan and Ms. Wallstatter, and the farmers ask you to oppose HB 2015. Thank you.
Thank you for the succinct testimony. Next will be Bo Whitney, followed by Rodriguez.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bo Whitney, and I'm the founder of and chief economist at Whitney Economics. We're a global leader in cannabis and hemp business consulting and economic research. My research going back 7 years covers adult use medical and industrial cannabis. I have pioneered work on cannabis demand elasticity, the economic multiplier effects, taxation, and policy. I've contributed these insights to multiple state legislatures, congressional delegates, and ministry levels officials globally. I've examined the proposed legislation that would enable counties to increase the local sales tax from 3% to a maximum of 10%. Whitney Economics has a policy of generally not taking positions on legislation, but instead examines the potential impact that legislation would have on the state and the industry. In examining this legislation, I examine the sensitivities cannabis consumers have regarding changes in price, also known as the elasticity of demand. I've also leveraged my predictive models that look at the relationship between tax rates and consumer conversion patterns from the illicit market to legal market. This predictive model has examined changes to Oregon tax rates before and is proven to be highly precise with forecast effects coming within 1.8% of actual demand in previous examinations. The findings and observations of this analysis: consumers are highly price sensitive. In fact, a recent cannabis survey of consumers showed that 77% of consumers use price as a determining factor in their purchases. With an elasticity in excess of -2.0, the impact of an increase of 7% in taxation would be a demand decrease of 14%. This equates to a decrease in demand of $140 million statewide based upon 2020 sales. Although the proposed tax rate would suggest a $70 million increase in tax revenues for counties, based upon consumer sensitivities, our models indicate that sales decrease in volume would show a forecast decline by $24 million. It would also result in a decline of 2,800 employees and would force workers, decrease workers' employment, and would increase state costs for healthcare expenditures. So the impact is a decline in revenue, decline in sales, and a reduction in employment.
Mr. Whitney, thank you. Perhaps you didn't hear the bell. If you have other remarks, you are welcome to send them to us as written testimony.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Marissa Rodriguez, followed by Sally Alworth. Marissa Rodriguez.
Hello. Chair Nathanson, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Time is short.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. I'd like to voice support of previous comments made by Portia Mittens, Casey Houlihan, Russ Belleville, Ben Condon, and Bo Whitney. My name is Marissa Rodriguez, and I am the COO of a marijuana wholesaler in Clackamas County. And I am here to implore you to oppose House Bill 2015. In addition to the previously mentioned comments regarding this specific burdens to marijuana businesses in Oregon, which is illicit market competition, greater business expenses, insurance, banking and lending, compliance, and IRS tax code 280E. I'm particularly concerned additionally into to price sensitivity, but in my experience, because I am a wholesaler and support all of the license types in the supply chain, what we witness is that when taxes go up or price needs to go down because we need to maintain competitive with the illicit market, that cost goes back up the supply chain. So the retailer has to have a walk out the door price to the consumer that is competitive with the illicit market, which means that pressure gets pushed back up the supply chain. It gets pushed back up to the wholesaler or the distributor. It gets pushed back up to the processor. It gets pushed back to the farm. And when that happens, that becomes very challenging for the rest of the supply chain. It's not just the retailer and the consumer that are affected by an increase in taxes. It's the entire supply chain. And I want to keep those people in. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Sally Alworth.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today against House Bill 2015. I'll be brief. I'd like to
Sure to say your name first.
I apologize for that. I'm Sally Alworth. I'm the co-owner of Luminous Botanicals. We are an OLCC licensed cannabis and hemp processor based here in Portland. And I can be brief. I'd just like to lend my support for the comments made by Casey Houlihan, Megan Wallstatter, Bo Whitney, and Marissa Rodriguez. I think they've covered the main reasons that a tax hike at this time would be catastrophic, particularly for small cannabis businesses like my own. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for the way you delivered it in a succinct fashion, yet very clear. We get the message when people do it that way. And I apologize for not saying your name very well. That concludes the list of witnesses, I believe, for House Bill 2015 as well as 2014. I want to ask staff, Manny, can you confirm that we have finished the entire list?
Yes, Madam Chair.
We have? Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you close the public hearing on House Bill 2015, I just wanted to clarify the process of increasing a tax or decreasing a tax on marijuana and have Mr. Malik respond. So my understanding is his answer was that it needed to be approved by a local municipality or the local governing body, which could be municipality or county commission. But I also want to clarify whether it needs to then be referred to the people or not.
Yes, it is a two-stage process. So it has to have the positive action or a positive vote by the governing body. And the governing body would be sending it for the voters to approve that. So it is a two-stage process that has to go through.
Thank you, Mr. Malik. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. Thank you both. I'm glad we have that clarification. Is there any other business before I close the public hearing on these two bills? I do want to move to the next one. Not seeing anything. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2014, closing the public hearing on House Bill 2015. And I am now opening a public hearing on House Bill 2294. We will receive a very brief introduction to what the bill does. And we have at least 13 people signed up to testify on this one as well. But we will begin with the bill's chief sponsor. That will be Representative Morgan. So, Mr. Malik, please present this bill for us, 2294.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2294 takes the tax on marijuana and imposes or attempts to describe a new version of the tax in addition to what exists as the point of sale. This would be distribution or a wholesaler type of tax. And the wholesaler type of tax that is confined within the boundaries of each county in a sense that the county would, or the tax would occur, the incidence would occur once the product is moved from the borders of that county of origin. Once it goes out, it is taxed. Basically, transactions within the counties are not. However, there was a whole set of different types of businesses and intermediate steps that the tax might occur at. And if you see in the bill, there is a whole bunch of empty lines, and those basically indicate that tax have not been specified for the rate of it, but also says that a different incidence. So example, if it's usable marijuana versus manufactured for ointments or edibles or so on. So I was talking with legislative council yesterday, and this might mean that there is some level of compounding of the tax depending on how many steps and how many counties that occurs. But basically the idea is to collect these taxes on the wholesale type of process, not the production or not the cultivation tax, but a wholesale tax. And then whatever the taxes occur or how much comes in revenue from those taxes, you would have a distribution that goes to the counties for the same amount of taxes that were collected from the counties. So it's basically a county tax and county benefit type of tax.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Mr. Malik before we take public testimony? I don't see any. Okay, we will now go to our witness list for House Bill 2294. There are two legislators. First, I'd like to hear from Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke and the other members of Revenue. It is an honor to be with you today. My name is Lily Morgan. I am the representative for House District 3, which is the heart of Josephine County. It is no secret that Southern Oregon is known for growing world-renowned cannabis. Josephine and Jackson counties are the primary producers of legal cannabis in Oregon. Yet in these counties, the black market cultivation is rampant and conducted in plain sight. The criminal activity associated with these sites does not stop with production or distribution of marijuana. In conjunction with the illegal grow sites, local law enforcement has investigated homicides, robberies, rapes, assaults, human trafficking, home invasions, thefts, burglaries, and other crimes that have overwhelmed local law enforcement resources. Tax revenues from the retail sale of cannabis do not adequately address the legal and social ramifications of the high number of illicit cannabis operations. These unlawful operations also jeopardize legal operators and damage the credibility of Oregon's regulated marijuana program. I need to acknowledge that this bill is not the right solution at this time, as it was crafted initially for the interstate commerce of cannabis, which has not happened yet. This work was started by my predecessor, Representative Wilson, in his office, and has also been addressed by Representative David Brock Smith in another form. The current way tax revenue is distributed is untenable. The counties with most of their production see the least amount of tax. However, the simple fact that we have less retailers bears small relation to the challenges we face. Our county and city governments and law enforcement have a plethora of demands equal to the needs of Oregon's population centers. The negative fiscal impacts on local government in Southwest Oregon from the cannabis industry and how that needs to be addressed for the industry to be as vibrant as it can be in the new regulated intrastate and interstate markets. Cannabis promises to be a long-term, substantial cash crop for Southwest Oregon, but we've got to get our act cleaned up and get rid of the criminal element and ensure that we have adequately regulating THC to ensure that Oregon can and will be the center of the cannabis industry and all of the economic development and opportunities that can provide. While I do not think you should push this bill forward, I ask on behalf of my constituents that this body work vigorously to fix the current flaws and disparities with how the cannabis tax revenue is being dispersed. Today, there are others that will testify with me that I have been working with and look forward to continue working with. First will be Representative David Brock Smith, who, like I said before, had a similar bill in 2019 session. I have Amanda Metzler with Farms, Inc., and Rob Bovet with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I thank you for your time.
Representative Morgan, thank you very much for your testimony. We do have a number of people signed up to testify who I'm sure have ideas, both, well, some neutral and some opposed. But I just want to clarify, you said the bill didn't really seem ready at this time. Is that correct?
That is correct. The three other names that I addressed are the ones that I'm working with, and I think would offer information to the committee that would be helpful. And that's correct, that I do not think it should move forward, but I think it should be something that this group authorizes, maybe a work group moving forward, even post-session, and that the opportunity to work with the industry and the counties is necessary so that we can protect the lawful grows, but also hold accountable those that are not. And the disparity between the counties and local governments with what's going on in the urban areas is significant. But I had a panel prepared. It's up to you, of course, Chair, what you would like to proceed with.
Representative Morgan, I am very happy to hear from your panel, and we do have witnesses who are signed up. They may choose to not testify if they know there's not a bill moving at the present time. We'll just see. And I thank you for your suggestion that perhaps there should be a work group. It seems to me that there's an intersection of some different interests here. There's a taxation issue, but there's also an issue of enforcement and maybe even a business and economy angle to this. So it could be that a work group, rather than focused in just one committee's area, maybe should consider how we can bring those different interests to the same table. Next, I'd like to hear from Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues on the committee. I'm sorry I had to switch to my phone. We have a windstorm going on over here on the coast, and I just lost power and therefore internet. So thank goodness for self-service. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, Madam Chair. I too, as Representative Morgan, have a cannabis export tax piece of legislation. I did not see it scheduled today on Cannabis Day in your committee, nor on Monday when you're talking about cannabis, on the 8th. And so I thought I might come in and talk about this one today. And that is House Bill 3175 for those colleagues that are on committee. It is similar to Rep. Morgan's legislation here, as we've been collaborating on these ideas that she had mentioned for quite some time. Because I have a rather large district, colleagues. This is also David Brocksmith, state representative. I don't think I put my name on the record. I apologize, Madam Chair. I have a rather large district on the southwest coast that encompasses a lot of cannabis and a lot of grows, because I have west of I-5 from Roseburg to carves into West Cape Junction. And so with that comes all of the problems that Representative Morgan mentioned. And what happens, Madam Chair, is with the 3% tax that is associated with cannabis at the point of sale, as Rep. Morgan mentioned, we grow the best cannabis in the state, arguably, but it is mostly sold in your district, Representative, and others in our colleagues' districts in Portland, in urban areas, and they receive the 3% benefit from the sale of that cannabis, and not the counties that are growing those cannabis plants. And so, as Rep. Morgan said, there's a tremendous burden on these industries right now with COVID, with water resources. The market is flooded, which is just for the cannabis growers that are on, and farmers that are on the line. I have two bills in general government, colleagues. 3252 would allow the governor to enter into conversations with the governors of Idaho, so that we can transport cannabis across Idaho into Montana and Colorado. That corresponds with House Bill 3253 that allows the export of cannabis outside of Oregon to other states that have passed recreational cannabis laws themselves. I think that if we were able to do that and actually had these markets opened up in other areas so we can reduce the surplus in Oregon, because we do grow the best, I would arguably say in the Western United States, we would have the ability to grow this market in ways that we've never had before. So, Madam Chair and colleagues, this is a and I cut off, excuse me, Madam Chair, when you were discussing maybe a possible work group on this issue. Again, I had to chime in, but this is an issue that we need to find a solution for, and trying to adjust the tax distribution that was in the that are in the laws for opening, you know, recreational marijuana in the state is something that we really need to have, but unfortunately that is a door that's hard to pry open, as we all know. So Madam Chair and colleagues, I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation. Madam Chair, there's no need to schedule my bill 3175 in your committee at this point, because we've had that conversation here. The cannabis industry just is hurting right now, and we don't need to add a burden on them at this time, but we do need to have a conversation on how we fix the need for these local law enforcement districts to have the code enforcement resources that they need to provide the safety within these counties where these grows occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Committee, we're running late. I want to tell you that I do intend to call on the next two speakers, Amanda Metzler and Rob Bovet. After that, we will need to stop for the day, because we're already it looks like we're going to be a little over time. I will be carrying over House Bill 2294 to our next meeting. In the event that anyone left on the witness list today still wants to testify, having had the explanation of how this bill is and is not going to be handled over the coming weeks and months. But still, if you would like to testify and you haven't testified today, I'm carrying this over to our next meeting. That said, we still have two more speakers I do want to hear before the end of the day. Amanda Metzler, followed by Rob Bovet.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Amanda Metzler, founder and president of Farms Inc., Oregon's Cannabis Farm Advocates, and I also chair the Josephine County Cannabis Advisory Panel. Representative Morgan and I work closely together while in her role as Josephine County Commissioner, and I want to thank her for acknowledging that this is not the bill and shining a light on the issues that cannabis-producing counties of Southern Oregon are facing. As was previously mentioned by my colleagues, any tax on our emerging industry would cripple it. However, an alternate revenue stream is possible once interstate commerce opens. That is when we should have the discussion, and that stream is where counties in which where the cannabis was grown should be compensated. It is only a fair trade, since currently it is the reverse. The counties with large population centers benefit greatest from the cannabis tax, while the counties growing it obviously have less dense populations. With interstate commerce, we, the farmer, can grow it, the product can be sold out of state, and the producing counties can benefit. Again, thank you, Representative Morgan, for bringing light to the issue, and I look forward to the discussion and the work group.
Thank you, Ms. Metzler. The last speaker today will be Rob Bovet.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, again, Rob Bovet, legal counsel, legislative director for the Association of Oregon Counties. Bottom line, we need help. We are not adequately regulating the production side of cannabis. There are a lot of good actors, a lot of great licensed actors, but there's also a lot of bad actors in Southwest Oregon in particular. I won't add to what's already been said by Representative Morgan. She's spot on. We need help. So we're looking forward to this work group. We need more regulatory authority over all cannabis, including time, place, and manner regulatory authority, and we need more resources. We are falling way short in enforcement and making sure that the bad actors are removed from the playing field. We need to make sure that our folks that are operating lawfully, and many of them have invested enormous sums of their time and money to operate lawfully, we need to make sure that they don't have unfair competition from the black market, which is what's happening right now. So we need your help on Southwest Oregon. Happy to do a work group, but this problem's been lingering, and with the development of now Delta 8 THC conversions out of the hemp industry, the problems are getting worse. So we simply have to address this issue. Happy to answer any questions. We just ditto to what you've heard from the other panel members.
Thank you for the testimony. Thank you to all four of you. Committee members, do you have questions for these four speakers? I'm not seeing any. I am carrying over House Bill 2214 to our next meeting.
2294.
Oh, sorry, 2294. Yes, there we go. 2294 to the next meeting. Thank you, Representative Rushkin. I have heard a number of big picture issues on this bill and the previous bills that I hope this committee is willing to discuss in a subsequent meeting, whether it's a work session or an informational meeting. I would like to have more information about what has been described as black market or illicit operations other things related to regulating the production and sale. I'd like to hear more about the winners and losers, and a little bit more about how the impetus for at least some of this is to make up for revenue that was lost because of passing Measure 110. So those are some of the big picture things that I would like to continue thinking about. Mr. Allenack, do I need to close a public hearing, or was my carrying it over an adequate mechanism?
You should still close it for today, Madam Chair, but you did carry it over.
Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2294, and it is carried over to the next meeting. The next meeting is Monday, is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Any other business before the committee today before we adjourn?
Madam Chair, this is
Representative
Pam.
March.
Thank you. I'm sorry I had my hand up, but I'd like to add one item to your list of information that we really need to look at the cannabis issue, if I may. And that is anyone's good thinking about what a metric would look like to try to measure or even evaluate the impacts of cannabis on counties versus cities. I mean, right now each is getting 10% because that's what the law says. And it's a fairly arbitrary number that isn't attached to what the responsibilities or the implications are of cannabis within a city or within a county. And as we look at, if we do look at increasing a cannabis tax, I think that's a fundamental issue that we have to look at, is what's fair between those entities. And fairness starts with what's the impact. And I don't know that we can measure that at all, but I'd love people's best thinking on it.
Thank you, Rep. Marsh. Mr. Allenack, any final words or observations?
I would just add for any of the public that the next meeting is Monday. I can't recall if you actually said Monday.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony, for staying with us today. We're adjourned.